This episode is brought to you by Podomatic, the easiest way for podcast fans to become podcasters. Go to podomatic.com or search Podomatic in your app store to start your own podcast for free and find your audience. Hello and welcome to episode number 359 of the Super Horror Bros podcast. I'm your host Matt, and joining me as always is my brother Mike.
Hello.
How's it going?
Pretty damn good.
We are back, back in the cinema this week, which is always nice. Bit of cinema original horror, which is our favourite, but obviously perhaps not our favourite subgenre, but we will get to all that stuff as we discuss Talk to Me, a very talked about movie, in fact, of this year.
Certainly the finite opportunity to actually see original cinema horror. Do you know what I mean? You know, cinema horror is great, but let alone original cinema horror.
Yeah, and it's cool that, like you say, we'll obviously get into the genre stuff, but it's nice that this has been a very talked about horror movie, one that has done very well, and is, you know, a big A24 release, which is always nice. But yeah, we'll get to the news now, and obviously we have actually a kind of small tidbit to get through regarding this week's movie, which we'll get to in a second. But we have one megaton lead story once again. One that we've been waiting for a while, actually, to hear confirmation to do with Scream. There's been a lot of speculation these kind of past few weeks about what they're doing with Scream. Obviously, the two recent movies have done extremely well. And that kind of collective, filmmaking collective known as Radio Silence, that have kind of done those two movies. We know that they've just shot a film for release next year. The kind of untitled Universal Monster film, which, God, just give it a title already. It's out in less than a year. But we know that that's their next project. So it was kind of what's going on with Scream, where they're going to put it on the shelf. And I thought, which has now turned out to be not the case, was that they had kind of agreed a deal where it was a case of, okay, we'll do one, then we'll give you the one. We've seen that before in likes of Saw and stuff, where the directors don't want to continue, and they're like, look, if you let us do this original thing, we'll then come back and do the sequel that you want. So that's what I was fully expecting, that it would just be a case of we'll get Scream in 3 years rather than one. But that is not the case, because there was rumors in the past week, and I'm glad that this has seemingly been confirmed now. This is via The Hollywood Reporter, but I don't think Spyglass, who are in charge of Scream, have come out and said this, but The Hollywood Reporter aren't wrong. So we know who is now directing Scream 7, and it is, yeah, not that the team behind the last two. But it is someone that we've followed. Someone who we've covered three of their films and have pretty much liked all of them, which is a good sign. Obviously, the first one being the breakout hit. But this is going to be Christopher Landon is going to take over Scream 7. Obviously, he was the director of Happy Death Day, absolutely absurdly awesome horror film. He obviously did the follow-up, Happy Death Day 2U, and as well as Freaky. So obviously very much in the sort of horror comedy, but definitely, you know, I don't want to, you know, disregard his horror chops, because I think the horror in all of those movies is really good. He definitely comes from a more stricter horror background. He basically wrote all of the Paranormal Activity sequels, and he directed the most recent one as well, which I've not seen. And he also did a Netflix movie this year, in fact, which seemed like a more of a comedy type. Yeah, it's like this spooky ghost thing with David Harbour in it. Yeah, I'm kind of interested to see it now, just because we've covered all of his stuff. But I remember seeing that, I think Anthony Mackie's in it as well, and I remember seeing a bit of the trailer, and it just looked like a family-friendly sort of ghosty film. Didn't look bad, it just didn't look like something that was particularly horror-focused. But yeah, Christopher Landon is doing Scream. I mean, this is a massive news item. We kind of, a few other things here before we then give our thoughts on it. The Radio Silence guys are staying on as executive producers, which you would assume. It says no word yet on who will be writing Scream 7, which I think is fascinating, because as I've just said, kind of Radio Silence is a duo that direct, and then a different duo that write. So it's four separate people. So you wonder if they couldn't have come to a deal to at least get the writing taken care of by them, because obviously they're the ones that have created these new characters, the core four as we know them. A shame if this is kind of the conclusion of this new trilogy and they're not the ones writing it. So we'll see on that front. Obviously, that's purely speculation at this point. The last thing of note in the Hollywood Reporter's report, which is they said that Melissa Barrera and Mason Gooden are expected to return. But they had an extra note on Jenna Ortega just saying that Ortega's deal will be one to watch, as the actress signed on to the franchise before she was catapulted to the A-list thanks to Netflix's Wednesday. So, like, I don't really know what that means, if they're basically saying, like, yeah, she's going to cost a lot more now. Which, if that's what they're saying, I mean, that's not a problem. Like, that's a great thing that you cast someone who is now more popular than when you originally cast them. Like, if this is an issue, the entire thing is fucked, because that should not be an issue. Like, having an actress that you hired that is now infinitely more popular and she's been incredibly well received in this franchise, like, yeah, just pay the money. Like, it doesn't matter. And she's not going to be asking stupid money. Like, come on. It, like, Wednesday was good, but she's not winning Oscars or, like, doing crazy big films. So,
yeah. I think, like, catapulted to the A-list. Like, don't get me wrong, she is a hot name right now. But, like, Wednesday alone isn't, like, you know, getting her to the stratosphere, you know. It's,
Yeah, Scream is a big part of that as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, it's all pretty much good news, though, really. Like, you know, we would have liked Radio Silence with the fact that they've given us two great Scream movies, but they've given us enough of a basis to build upon, and I'm just, like, bloodthirsty for more Scream after it being so good. And I think Christopher Landon is a great fit. You know, you look at what films in recent years that are kind of spiritual successors to Scream, and I look at Happy Death Day and I look at Freaky and I say, well, yeah, you can see the Scream DNA there. They may have gone a little bit more comedy at times, but turning that comedy into more of a, you know, satire on the horror genre is a very easy, quick thing to do. And especially with Happy Death Day, you can see the parallels there massively. So, you know, I think he's a great shout as a replacement. Other than the boy Flanagan, like, I can't really, you know, there aren't too many people that.
Now, there's other franchises I'd rather put Flanagan on.
No, I know, I'm joking. I genuinely think he's a good fit, Landon. Mm. You know, I think with his body of work, yeah, you know, name anyone that would be better to fill their shoes.
Mm.
You know, and I think he'd struggle. And so, yeah, you know, I think the casting is super important at this point. You know, the legacy characters pre-Core 4, don't matter at this point. That's blasphemy, I know, but it's true. Mm. But it's a case of, can you continue this new story now? You know, I already saw, you know, because the second this came out, I saw people, like, saying about Nev, like, oh, yeah, will she return? Will that be great? I'm like, I am the biggest Scream fan out there. You know, I've fucking lived this for my entire adult life and I love it. And I love Neve Campbell and I love Sydney, but that story is done for me. Like, I'm happy and I want Sid to just be out of it.
Mm.
Like this movie coming out and Gale just being like, Sid's good.
One of the worst parts of it.
Correct, but one of the best bits was when she was like, do you know, Sid's good. Like,
oh, yeah, that was great, yeah.
You know, and just that little line to just be like, yeah, cool. And, like, that's all I need. Like,
yeah, I think Sydney's involvement in Scream 6 was better than her involvement in Scream 5, which involved her being on screen.
Agreed.
Again, yeah, again, know, I completely echo what you're saying. That's nothing to do with the character or the actress or anything. Obviously, the legacy is secure and she's incredible. But yeah, I'm completely with you of, like, that's the biggest thing for me here. There's so many different scenarios that we can discuss, obviously. I really, really hope that, like, I'm so glad Dewey got his send-off, you know, even though it wasn't perfect in a lot of ways, but I'm glad that he got that. And yeah, I don't want to see any more legacy. Like, we fucked around with it, and they were like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if Kirby wasn't dead? And obviously, there's been so many talks about Stu for so long, and, like, just don't mess around with this. You've got the core four. You've actually built up an interesting lore with the current killers. Mm. in terms of how they link with one another. We already talked about how I think the reveal in 6 strengthens 5, and there's so much potential with that family to do more in 7 as well. Like, there's a very glaring, you know, not to get into it, but there's a very glaring family member that they've been talking about for 2 films now that we haven't seen, and I feel like they have to be a role in this 7th movie for sure.
Yeah, and you know, I think that is the biggest weight of anyone coming into this franchise is getting a good killer. A good killer with a good reason, because that is, you know, the thing that we moaned about 6, 5, 4 and kind of said, okay, well, 6 is now kind of retconned that, and also, you know, made 5 better because of 6. And it's like, yeah, if we had a pointless killer in 7, does that movie, you know, that makes it difficult to be achievable. But I don't think you can just go easy and be like, oh yeah, let's bring Stu back or whatever. I think it is a case of, no, come up with something clever. Like, you've got to do that, and then you know, everything else falls into place, I think, with the core 4 being as great as they are. And you know, I really want to reiterate that I think, you know, Sydney, I think she's probably my favorite final girl in all of horror. And so to say that, like, I don't want her part of the franchise just shows what they've built with these 2 movies, where they have progressed it, and I think it shows that Scream can continue beyond the core 4 as well. Like, their story isn't finished yet, and I you know, if that's 1 movie or 2 movies, but I don't want us to be, you know, another 6 movies from now and being like, oh, Jenna Ortega has to be in Scream or it's not a Scream movie. Like, I want this to be just an evolving franchise of this just kind of, you know, fucked up history. And I think the whole bringing Billy into 5 and having him as this link and kind of transition that into 6 was a great way to just bring in the legacy characters and drift them out. Like, the more I think about 5 and 6, the more I'm happy with it. And I think they've got into such a good place where we can now move beyond that and still feel like a Scream franchise.
Yeah, for sure. I think for me, like, I think I agree with you that Christopher Landon is such a good fit. Like, I think if you had to, you know, say, okay, they need to substitute someone in, I think he is perfect. And I think his slasher chops are really underrated, specifically in that first Happy Death Day and Freaky. Like, I remember Freaky was almost unbelievable, how that was so comedy focused, but the kills were crazy. And to think that he can be, you know, focus things different, like you said it perfectly, like, you can just see how he can just adapt a few things and fit the Scream mold perfectly. So I'm totally with you on that. I think I differ slightly in that, like, I don't need more Scream right now. I was so unbelievably blown away by this year's installment that, like, I'm good for a while, and I would have hoped that what I had speculated had been true, because I would have loved for Radio Silence to go off, make their own thing, and then come back and finish their trilogy and have 3 or 4 years between them. I would have been so eagerly anticipating that conclusion. And I think that's the other part of this, is that whilst we know that's not true now, I really want this to be the conclusion of this chapter of the franchise. Because again, I love the core 4 so much. And I think what they've done, they have added to the legacy of this already one of the best horror franchises around. But I don't want to see them again I want them to end this with a trilogy. I think 3 films for these 4 characters is the perfect amount. I don't want to see them just keep milking it. And obviously if it gets to 8 and 9 and stuff, because then it will just feel fatiguing. And right now they're hitting on all cylinders, the movies are great, they're making a shit ton of money. I know that only one of those things matters to the people making these films, so we'll just have to see on that one. But and I'm not too worried about that, because we're talking about so far in the future. These are problems that, you know, you shouldn't anticipate until you're right there, until you're there in the Saw franchise, you know. Like, so right now I'm happy with this, and it's, I think that's the other thing as well, like, with the core 4, like, I maybe part of them is anticipating, like, oh, we need to get this done now. But I just don't feel that way. I feel like you could wait 3-4 years and you would still get this cast. Again, I know they're kind of anticipating that Jenna is going to go off and do bigger and better things, but I still feel
Jenna's the one they're worried about more than anything.
They clearly are, but, like, again, I just don't. She's already big, like, as the Hollywood Reporter noted, and I don't think it's going to get crazier in the next 4, 5, 6 years to the point where they typically couldn't afford her. I just think that's ridiculous. Like, we've seen such huge breakouts in horror that have revisited in the past and stuff, and I just don't see that being the case, that even if she was like, oh yeah, she won an Oscar, and then she's also got this. And the only thing I foresee, which again, I think the film industry in general is moving away from this, is if she got tied down to one of those crazy superhero contracts where, yeah, like, where like back in the day, you know, ScarJo got Black Widow, and it was like, she, you know, she was still doing the occasional other film, but it was basically like 10 months of her year was blocked out just for Marvel.
And yeah, like, she was doing that 10-year Wednesday deal with Netflix, then it's like game over. But
yeah, I just don't foresee that anymore, you know, right. So I don't think that's going to be the case. So, but yeah, this is cool. Go for it.
Do you think, odds on favorite Tara to be the killer in Scream 7?
I don't know, man. Like, there's so many different ways. Like I said, I was hinting at a kind of family member, and I want to see that concluded.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what they're going to go with that, but it's been so talked about with their family history that there's been this one character that, like, they've talked about, and it was almost laughable.
That's the two of them.
Yeah, like, it's just, I'm excited either way. Like, I don't care about that right now, and I try not to keep going into most Scream movies, to be honest. I think that's kind of the attitude that we both share, is that we want it to just be good, and we don't worry too much about it as we're watching it that first time. I think that is more of a rewatch issue, as we've discussed, that, like, when you watch a Scream movie, you have a certain watch that never gets replicated, and yeah, it's always about those rewatches for us of, like, and that's why, you know, I watched Scream 6 quite quickly after watching it the first time, because I needed to know my real thoughts on it, and it only solidified how much I loved it. So yeah, I'm not worried about that, to be honest. Like, there's so many different ways they could go with it, but like I said, I really now, and again, we don't know about release dates or anything, they haven't talked about that, like, are they going to try and pump this out and put it out next year, who knows, but I just want to know who's writing it. That's like my biggest thing.
Yeah. That is huge,
because Christopher Landon does write, but he doesn't write everything. Like, he didn't write the first Happy Death Day, but he did write the second. He co-wrote Freaky, and he typically co-writes, it seems like. I looked at his writing credits earlier, so I would love for a world where he could sit down with those two guys from Radio Silence and kind of hash something out together. I think would be the perfect
either
world,
that or Dog, you know, one or the other.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll see. Like I say, we can talk to death about Scream. It's so awesome, and like it's so great that it's
long time listeners of the show are very aware of this.
But it's one of the rare things that we can talk about in a modern light that we love the legacy of, and right, but it's still positive. It's almost the only one where you don't have to have that caveat of, like, when we talk about Hellraiser recently and we're like, oh yeah, those first two. Oh, and then you kind of just, There's this elephant in the room that you just don't discuss, let alone something like Saw that is, you know.
Well, I can say at least we'll get to do that with Saw again soon.
Yeah, that'll be nice. But yeah, we shall see. I'm sure there'll probably be something else to talk about at Scream next week. Who knows? There'll be like General Tagle to put out a statement saying that she's too busy and she can't do it anymore, and then we'll have to talk about that for 30 minutes.
Due to creative differences, she could not come to an agreement, and she would not be reprising the role.
God, who knows? But we shall wait and see on that one. And then, yeah, just lastly, this will just kind of lead us into our chat, really, because we won't have too much to say almost anything about this until we actually talk to me, and then we'll kind of, you know, circle back to this, because I do find this interesting. But there's kind of two tidbits here where the Talk to Me is a big success, doing extremely well. And again, an interview with the Hollywood Reporter, the two directors were talking about the movie, and they kind of said that they've already shot a prequel to this film. Which, yeah, sounds very Pearl, but it doesn't seem like it's a feature-length thing. It seems more like a small little thing that they just put online, which is cool. They said, we actually shot an entire Duckett prequel already. Duckett is the character you see in the opening scene. It's told entirely through the perspective of mobile phones and social media, so maybe down the line we can release that. So that's kind of the first thing. Then they were talking about a potential sequel, saying, whilst also writing the first film, you can't help but write scenes for a second film. There's just so many scenes. The mythology was so thick, and yeah, if A24 gave us the opportunity, we wouldn't be able to resist it. I feel like we'd jump at it. We have a lot of original stories that we would like to tell, but the Talk to Me stuff is exciting to us too, so the idea of a sequel, we wouldn't be opposed to it. So that was the initial thing, and then as of today, A24 have greenlit a sequel. Nice. So Talk to Me 2 is coming, and the directors are returning. And that's all we have on that one for right now. So yeah, we can't really say too much about, you know, whether we'd want a sequel or what they would potentially do with it. So we'll try and remember to touch upon this after we've talked about the movie. But shall we talk about this week's film?
Talk to Me.
let's talk about Talk to Me. So yeah, I feel like I've said the word talk a billion times already, and that's probably going to continue. But yeah, this is as we discussed before, a brand new original IP. It's one of those ones that it feels like this would be based upon like a short film or something. And especially with this director's background, because these are actually, I don't know if you knew this, these are two YouTubers. They've been on the YouTube scene for about a decade. And I hadn't heard of them, but I kind of looked into it. Fairly big in Australia, like multiple million subscribers account. It seems like they just came up with this idea and ran with it. Like, I really want to know exactly what happened. It's a hell of a transition from doing that sort of content, you know, just YouTube based content, to then make an actual, like, I'd heard that a while ago. I remember when I looked it up after the trailer, and I was really nervous because I was like, oh, I just know what type of content, you know, a lot of YouTubers do, and it's a more quick based cuts. Yeah, and just like they're a comedy channel as well, and it's you know, it's going to be a very different style, whereas I don't see any of that, and I didn't see that in the trailer. But that's why I was like, huh, that's interesting that they're YouTubers. And then, you know, thankfully, having now seen the movie, like, I don't think that's noticeable in the slightest. Like, I think this plays like a horror film. It doesn't play like two YouTubers that dicked around and made a film. But that is interesting nonetheless. And so, yeah, this is, as we said, an original film that I'm sure we talked about the trailer not that long ago, courtesy of A24. But yeah, what is Talk to Me about?
Yeah, well, the movie centers around kind of our lead character, Mia, and her group of friends who, friends slash people who kind of hate her, but let her come to the party anyway. And it centers around this kind of, it starts off as this kind of social media trend where these parties are getting hype and you don't quite know why they're getting hype until eventually Mia gets to go to one. And basically they've got this embalmed hand that they have figured out some sort of weird ceremony of sorts where if you hold hands with the severed hand and say, talk to me, you let a spirit into your kind of world, or you let yourself into the spirit world and see this kind of spirit. And then if you say, is it let me in? I think then basically you get possessed by the spirit. And at the same time you go off to get some sort of, you know, natural high kind of floating above your body kind of state. But as you're doing that, the ghost has now embodied you and is talking to the rest of the room. So these teens have figured out that you can only do it for, what was it, 90 seconds or something?
Yeah.
And then you have to kind of, the other kids in the room blow out the candle, which severs the link and gets you back into your body. And you kind of come out of it kind of with this natural high, and everyone else gets 90 seconds of seeing you possessed by some random person and filming it for the socials. And it's such an hilarious modern take on what like would happen if you got this sort of shit. Like, this is exactly what kids would do.
Oh, 100%.
Like, this is absolutely, and I think throughout the whole movie, so much of it just made me think. And it makes so much sense that this is made by YouTubers, now you've said, but it's done in a way that isn't, I don't want to say, I feel like that was like degrading, being like, oh, in a tacky way, but that's kind of what you would assume. Like you say, with a YouTuber that's a predominantly comedy channel, you'd expect it to be, you know, not as well polished as this is, but instead it's a really, you know, clever commentary on what, you know, understanding, you know, young people and modern technology, and understanding what they would do if they were given a severed hand that has a link to the spiritual world. You know, there's no real science behind it. They've just like, oh yeah, you can just do it for like 90 seconds and you kind of get a natural high off it, and we're going to film you looking like a twat. and they just go, sweet, I'm in.
Yeah, even the backstory of the hand is so hilarious, because it's just like, where did this come from? He's like, oh, just, you know, a guy just gave it to me at a party. Yeah. And that's all the movie ever explains, which again is perfect, because it's like, yep, that's what people would do. Like, that's all they needed to know.
Yeah, like, I was going to come onto it, like, deeper into the conversation with the fact that there's you know, when you talked about the news story where the writer said there's so much mythology and things to explore, I don't mean this in a negative way, where I'm just like, there's none of that in this movie. Like, what I've just told you is the mythology. There's a severed hand, you hold hands with it, you get to see ghosts and get possessed, and the kids just go, sweet, and they're like, do you want to know anything else? They're like, nah, not really, like cool, let me hold hands with this fucker and see what happens. And, you know, I think, you know, some of the, well, I was going to say some of the great horror movies, but just some of all horror movies in, you know, most of the time spend so much time talking about mythology. One of the ones I think about the most is The Ring, where the whole videotape and the whole 7 days is such a cool concept. And just like seeing that run its course, you only get once, well, you kind of get twice, because you get the end of it at the start of the movie for one person, and then you get to see the main character's journey throughout the 7 days for the rest of the movie. And one of the things with that I've always thought of is, like, I would prefer to just see like that 7 day cycle a few more times, because I want to see people get fucked up and see what happens. And this movie doesn't get bogged down with like, oh, let's figure out the rest of the hand, like where's the rest of this hand, you know, like why does this work? Who figured out this would work? How do we stop this? There's none of that. It's just like, yeah, I'm just going to keep touching the hand and seeing some spirits. And
yeah, you would in this movie, a modern day take on this would typically have them frantically searching websites, and that would be the bit where they would then have a YouTube video playing, and they would find out the lore that way. Of like, you know, back in the day, it would be go to the library and read newspapers, whereas now, yeah, they would pull up, you know, these conspiracy YouTubers, and it would be a funny little bit where it'd be, you know, a comedy guy doing a funny, you know, YouTube video, but it would be explaining like, hey, so here's this hand, and I've got the other hand. And oh, you won't believe what the foot does, like, you know, like that's where it would go. But like,
yeah,
I say,
you hire Lee Winnell for a day to do a YouTube video for
exactly.
You, you
know? Oh, it'd be so perfect. But yeah, like, and then I think it's so refreshing that the movie doesn't do that. I feel like a lot of the things this movie does aren't what you expect from like a possession movie, which I think is cool. Like, to me anyway, I think the way this story transpires, the way the hands used, and the way it kind of ties all together, it just wasn't what I was expecting. Like, I think it typically, like when we talked about Insidious and stuff, that there's just such a blueprint that you, that like, yeah, like
there's
the second the movie
formula.
Started, I knew exactly where it was going. And like, I think that's what's refreshing about, yes, this is typically a subgenre that I don't enjoy, but to just, it shows you that the subgenre isn't the problem. It's the people making possession movies just follow that formula and are so scared to veer off the path. Whereas I think something like this is such a fresh, original take on it. Whilst I think I completely agree with you, this is a meta commentary, I think, on possession movies and kind of how young people would be in this situation. That was like, what's something that worked so well to me, that they're so stupid. And I think this movie has like one of the best representations of the stupidity of youth, without being it like, it's not mean spirited, it's just showing you like, yeah, like young people are fucking stupid.
It's more the naivety, you know, of which is just, it's true, like you don't have the life experience when you're younger, you know that's why it's called life experience. And so when you're super young and you're given this weird thing, you know, this seven hand that can see spirits, you just go, fuck it, I'm gonna talk to me, like, you know. Whereas like, if someone said that to me now, like, oh, I've got this hand and if you hold hands with it you get possessed, I'm like, well, fuck off, like, you know.
Exactly.
But when you're 18 and you're at a party, you think, well, yeah, this sounds great, like, okay, cool. Sign
yeah, it shows their priorities, which is like, it's to have a good time, and then to post it on socials to get those clicks and to get that clout. And that is exactly how everyone reacts in this movie. Is like, no one really cares about anyone's well-being. Like, there's a few characters that were that like even when you're not into really. The story. No, like not as much as you would assume. You know, like say, it's hard to describe this as a friend group, even though it's presented as one, because they're all just such assholes and they're so narrow-minded and they're only focused on themselves. You know, like no one really cares about the well-being of anyone else. I think that's what's so great about this concept, which is so ridiculous. Again, of like you're letting the spirit in you to be possessed, where everyone else who's not doing it kind of mercifully takes the piss out of you.
And they're the ones that have to get you out of it.
Yeah, exactly. But then I also, for me, the one element that I didn't expect going into this movie, and it probably shows my naivety and kind of it only the penny dropped, like watching the film, which was a cool moment where I was like, oh, and you even mentioned it in your synopsis, like it is a drug to them. And that isn't something that, which I didn't realize from the trailer, where I was like, oh, they are doing this like a drug, because, you know, they're at a party and they're passing it around and they are all getting this high off it. And it was when that moment, there's like a cool montage scene in the film. And that was when it clicked for me, where I was like, oh, these are just dumb kids doing drugs at a party now, but their drug of choice is letting a ghost possess you. And I was like, oh, I was like, that's such a good take on this that I've not seen before. And again, works, because I fully believe people of that generation right now would act this way, genuinely. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not in a mean-spirited way. It's just that's what people do in this kind of social media era. So, there's so many different kind of threads to pull on, but I think the originality is what really stood out for me in this film.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, both of us have just jumped in talking about this movie with not given like firm impressions on it. And I think that just shows like how much there is to talk about and how clever this movie is with you know, what it's done and the way it portrays horror, where, you know, going into my thoughts on it, like I think this is one of the best cinema horrors we've seen in a long time in terms of for the mainstream, but also got like, you know, the cleverness and enough there for mainstream horror fans as well, where they're kind of, you know, gonna get something else from it. Because I think if you go to the cinema and you just want to have a dumb fun time and you go see these generic haunting movies and you see, you know, all of them, and you think, okay, yeah, they're just really fun to watch at the cinema, you're going to watch this movie and have a blast. I think our cinema had a blast watching it. And then us as people that don't genuinely, you know, like that sort of thing, you know, traditionally, I watched this movie and had a really good time. I was thoroughly entertained. It was a brand new IP. It was a brand new take on a genre that I'm sick to death of. But this not once made me think that way. You know, I thought, you know, even when we get to like seeing the ghosts and that sort of thing, all of that was just, you know, fresh, and the ghosts looked like, you know, just normal messed up people. There wasn't any, you know, obnoxious jump scares that are springing to mind now. Like I can't say with certainty that wasn't in the movie, but there wasn't anything like that triggered me. And you know, you mentioned it, I think this movie never went the way I'd expect. You know, when we saw the trailer and I kind of thought, oh, okay, this looks kind of cool. And, you know, these people get, you know, letting the spirits in, holding this hand. I kind of thought, oh, okay, yeah, you know, it's going to happen a couple of times. Our lead character is going to have it happen to them. And then they're going to do a shit ton of investigation. And that's not what happens at all. And in particular, when that little brother kind of gets his go on the hand, like I was not expecting that at all.
Yeah.
And when that happened, I was like, Jesus Christ. Like as soon as that happened, I was like, I don't know what's happening in this movie at all. Like all bets are off. And yeah, I was thoroughly entertained. And when I got to the end of the movie, I was like, cool. Like they didn't bother giving me all of this mythology. They just gave me a fun movie that had a satisfying conclusion for me, and yeah, I was very entertained throughout. The mum as well was probably the MVP for me, when just everything she said killed me. Like, and there were a couple of her lines that were absolutely brilliant. I really liked her. You know, I think often when you throw comedy in, and especially with a parent with comedy, I think it can be really cheesy and doesn't work. And I think back to Stranger Things, and when kind of Hopper was with Elle and Mike, and kind of, you know, that was just killing me and made me laugh. Like, that's exactly what the mum was like in this movie for me, where just everything she said was great. And yeah, I really liked her. Obviously, you know, she's the only real actress of note. I don't know her name, but obviously she's Eowyn from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, it's Martin. I was going to say, did you know who that was?
I didn't know her name off the top of my head, but like she, you know, I think this cast is relatively unknown. You know, it's a pretty Australian kind of, you know, made and I assume most of the actors are there as well. Out of it. I haven't looked at the IMDb since, but when I first came out, I saw a lot of, you know, fairly fresh IMDb's apart from her. Like I said, I just had a really good time with it and was really, you know, like I said, I was not expecting it. And then coming out of it, you know, I'm like, yeah, this is what cinema horror should be. You know, not everything should be catered specifically to our needs and they need to cater to the mainstream, but something like this can do both very successfully, I think. And then, you know, our cinema was rammed second week of it being here in the UK, which is pretty wild. And then the numbers speak for itself, you know. It just shows that if you make something, you haven't always got to milk the teat of a IP. You can do something fresh and something cool. And even in a subgenre that I'm done with, you can give me something that actually I'm like, hell yeah, this was really good.
Yeah, for sure. I think A24 deserve huge credit for that. Like, I think they... I don't understand. I feel like it just... At a certain point, it became cool to hate on A24. Because I get it. Yeah. Everyone was so loving them for a while. But it was so deserved. Like, the original horror that they've discovered and put out in the last 5 years has been unbelievable.
Yeah.
And for them to do, again, stuff like this, which is crazy unique and awesome, and for them to I thought this was impossible, like to come up with a new take on possession films in 2023. I genuinely thought was impossible, and especially the fact of we've already seen multiple ones of these this year, and there's still like four more big ones this year, and so for this to come out right in the middle of like probably the peak of my fatigue with these movies where I actively don't want to see them anymore. And we're probably not going to cover a lot of those ones because we just don't have anything else to add. Like, our conversations have just been the same over and over again. And so to see this, that we're so excited to talk about, is mind-blowing. And I think this movie is absolutely fantastic. And I think the only downside to it is because it's in a subgenre that I'm not a big fan of. Otherwise, I would be talking this up like one of the best movies of the year. Because there isn't anything about this that isn't fantastic. I think in terms of originality, it's easily one of the best of the year. I think the acting across the board is exceptional. Again, it's a very young cast, aside from Miranda. And they're the ones that carry the movie, and they do super well. I think Sophie Wilde as our lead is definitely the standout, no question about it. I think it's a real like breakout performance from her as Mia. But everyone else is pretty good. Like, they all play their roles great. Like, when I think about that friend group, quote unquote, during the montage scene, everyone's playing their role very well, with the kind of boyfriend, the friend, like the two who are more involved with the hand that I think are very funny, their back and forth. And then, like, say, the younger brother, like, they all do such a good job and all felt real in portraying a very hard, I think, kind of that young adolescence of, you know, you're not a kid anymore, but you're certainly not an adult. I think that's so hard to pull off, like, effectively.
It's normally annoying.
Yeah, because it'll even lean heavily one way or the other. You know, and it's difficult when you get into that age of like Stranger Things is going to have this issue where we still see them as kids because we knew them as kids. But whereas at a certain point, we're gonna have to start treating them like adults. And I think we've both had that struggle to come to terms with it, where like they could do a pregnancy angle and other like young adult stuff, which I'm not ready for that, even though they are completely age appropriate. It's like in my mind, they're just not that age. Whereas, yeah, I think this movie does that so well. And yeah, like all of the hand stuff, I just found it's so entertaining. I think was another thing of like, it ticks the boxes from a critical kind of reception. But then, yeah, I think what you said is so true of this appeals to a wider audience because I think it is fun it is funny, but not a comedy. You know, it knows when to use its comedy. Like, it has that one overt scene of comedy with Miranda, which is so good. But then the rest of the movie is just more just funny little asides, but they don't want to make it a comedy. This is a serious story with some real brutal moments. And I think those moments are earned because I didn't see them coming. Like I say, they hit you harder because of how unexpected they are. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the key to why a lot of those scenes of horror really worked for me, was like, I didn't think it would go as hard as it did in certain sequences. And then kind of as it went on, again, you're talking about, you know, we're only talking about the premise because we don't really want to get into the nitty-gritty of what the story's about. But I think that was what was so cool about the film, is like, you're presented with this ridiculous concept, which you immediately buy in, and they immediately sell you as it could be a real thing. But then I'm thinking to myself, so what is this film actually about? Because it's not just going to be about a bunch of teens getting high because some ghost has possessed them for a minute and a half. And so I think when it does actually get into the story, and backstories and stuff, I think all that stuff's really strong. Like, I had certain kind of things that I was expecting, particularly with the father of our lead character and kind of where that was going, but it never fully went. And I think I love that they didn't fully explain it either, of like what actually happened in the backstory. At least to my knowledge, I don't think they did. So I really liked that. But then the actual ending, which we're obviously not going to spoil, I thought the ending was perfect. Like, it was so good, because what, again, I don't want to say anything about it, but why it worked perfectly was that I've been so pissed off with endings where, God, what was that movie that we did like that you really liked? With the guy that went on to make the Hellraiser movie, David Bruckner. It's something like The Beach House or something. What the hell is that called?
Yeah, the Night House or something.
Is it The Night House? That sounds right. But while you double check, the movie was like so good, and it so had a clear ending that they should have executed on, but it was obvious that they couldn't sell that to the mainstream. They were like, we can't.
Yeah, it's The Night House.
Yeah, I thought so. They were like, we can't do this, even if it's what we should do, and it would have made the movie infinitely better. It was super dark, and it would have been like a St. Maud style ending where they're like, we just can't do this. And so they wussed out, and in my opinion, did a dreadful ending to a very good film. Whereas what this did was that it faked out doing that. Again, not into specifics, but like, I fell for the fake out perfectly, because I was like, yep, I'm seeing a cinema horror, so I know how I want this to end, and it's going to end differently. And I was like, yep, here we go. And then I went, oh shit. Oh no, they've done the double turn, and now they've got me. And now what I originally expected is unexpected, and it's awesome. Like, oh, the ending's so great. It was so perfect. After leading towards the hand stuff all film, and I had such a big question of kind of what happens on the other side, and to get that answered so beautifully and so perfectly, this kind of gets me to, like, I wanted to bring up, like, the news, and, you know, obviously they're doing a sequel and stuff, and like, I really don't want a sequel to this at all. Like, I feel like this movie was such a great execution of this concept. And as we've discussed, the fact that they don't bother going into lore, and it is just a guy had it at a party, I think is perfect for what this is. And so if it is a long, drawn out prequel to explain how this hand came to be, or even following on these groups of characters, I think the way this ends is perfect for these characters, and I don't want to see anything else. So for me, just as a quick aside, and then we can get back to this film, but I want to hear what you think about this. Like, I know we're getting a sequel, but that doesn't excite me. Like, I think this movie's fantastic, but it doesn't need a sequel. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I don't want to see these characters again. I thought they were great, but I'm with you that I thought this was the perfect ending for all the characters, and I can't really see how you could do a second movie that would give me more of them in the way that I would like. You know, I think this was perfect. I'm not against a sequel, because I did enjoy this concept, and as much as I love original horror, I get that. You know, of all the sequels that come out for franchises that I don't like, at least this is one that I do like. But yeah, I was very happy with this as a standalone movie. You know, this felt like It Follows, where I'm just like, oh, cool. This was just a really banger movie that I thoroughly enjoyed. And I think, you're right. I think as the ending ticked on and things started to fall into place, and as we got to those final scenes, I was like, this is perfect. I was like, this is the perfect way to end this movie. And you kept me guessing, like, which is just something that I tip my hat to, where I'm like, I never knew where it was going. And when I thought it was going in a direction, you kept turning it until you put me on the path for what was the great, you know, the perfect ending. And I wasn't sat here 20 minutes before the end thinking, that's what you're gonna do, you know. But as soon as you executed it, I was very happy.
Yeah, it was great. Like, it, that's been so rare, where I'm trying to think the last time an ending was this perfect, and I can't think of a film this year. Like, I think it's easily my favorite ending of this year, and then I'd have to go back further than that, because that's been a consistent thing with even movies that we've enjoyed have just completely fallen at the wayside towards the end. And so I think that they deserve huge credit for that, but it's even more exceptional when everything else in the movie is great. I think the setting was awesome as well, because it's cool to see something different. Like, this is probably a case more so for us, just because we see so much horror in a short period of time, covering it week to week. But you do see just so many of the same familiar setups and places. And so seeing a movie set in Australia with a you know, completely Australian cast, to me, just felt, it gave it like a different flavor of, like, again, you could have this film in America. And again, I don't ever want to sound like I'm anti any specific place. It's just, we get a lot from America a lot, and they're always the best films. But I loved seeing this in Australia, where I was like, oh, this does feel different. And we're now seeing a different youth that we're not as familiar with, and just different background of characters as well. I think Australia has such an interesting history as well, that you can tie that in with, like, the supernatural stuff. To me, it kind of does with America as well, but they never really tie into, like, Native American stuff, which would make a hell of a lot more sense. But I think Australia is also a perfect place for a film like this. Like, I don't know, England feels weird, because, like, we don't really have a history with anything like that. So, I don't know. I really liked the setting as well. That was just another thing of, like, this ticks so many boxes. Like, the horror sequences are great.
It's just nice to see different culture, like you say. You know, obviously American movies, you know, they're amazing, and there's so many of them, you know, you can't disregard it. But when we get to see these British movies that are more akin to what we know and are living in, and when we get to see these different, you know, in particular Australian movies, I think, you know, we had a phase of them pre-podcast. I don't know whether we've had, like, major bangers. I can't remember now whether Australia. We've had any.
No, yeah, it's been very quiet. We've hardly covered any Australian films.
Loved Ones is the one that comes to mind.
Yeah, where it was our director's follow-up, didn't we?
Yeah, what was that?
It was something about the devil, where it was like these worshippers in this house, and it had like a rock music angle as well. I'm trying to think what it was called.
Yeah, I remember. But yeah, you know, I think with Loved Ones, you know, both that and Talk to Me could have easily been made in America or England or wherever. You know, it's not specifically tailored to Australia, but just being in Australia and having this different setting and culture embedded in it, and conversation. I think the dynamic between parents and children, you know, just all of it, the friend group just was slightly different, and it did the whole movie felt fresh. And in a subgenre that's felt so stale, to watch something, you know, I think listeners of this podcast are going to be shocked if they haven't seen this movie and they've just heard our last, you know, year's conversation about cinema horror and haunted movies, you know, probably rolled an eye when they were like, oh God, they're talking about another one. They're going to be saying the same things. It's not their cup of tea over and over again. And even with something like Insidious, where we could see positives, but we're still like, oh, we can see the positives, but we just don't really like this shit. Whereas this is, you know, just nothing but positivity. And it's, you know, it just shows you can do something fresh if you're given, you know, just putting a fresh idea in there, not recycling the pot constantly. And, you know, you can be not afraid to go into a already kind of dried out well if you think you've got something different.
Yeah, for sure. It was the Devil's Candy was the
other one,
which is it's a shame he hasn't done anything else really since then, because
because they were both good
movies. Yeah, and it's like it was a 7-year wait between those, and again, that's just another example of like, man, it's hard, man. Getting indie work is incredibly difficult, and that's why I'm so thankful that,
especially outside of the States.
Yeah, exactly. You have to rely on a lot of government funding and stuff. Like, I'm pretty sure this movie had some sort of like Australian funding.
It was all at the start.
Yeah. So, like, and again, like, it's cool because that's how you get the movie made. Then you do the festival circuit. Then you get picked up by an amazing label like A24, and they take care of the rest. Like, they've handled this perfectly. I think the advertising has been solid, where there's been a lot of it, and it was good advertising. Whereas I think the posters and the trailers it effectively showed off this movie's strong point and its hook whilst not giving away anything. So like, that's super rare thing as well. Like, it really is just overall a positive film.
That System of a Down cover art.
Yeah, I know, it's great, isn't it?
I think at the start of the movie, it was kind of funny because it literally what you described is what the pre-credit stuff was, or it was funded by all these Australian grants and then referencing all of these film festivals and then all the distributors. And I was like, yeah, this movie was, you know, it feels like it was this labor of love that was funded by they just gamed the system. You know, they got all the funding from all the sources they could and made this happen. And to see this kind of come to fruition, like, I don't know what sort of budget this movie was,
$4.5 million.
I was gonna say it feels small. Yeah. and you know, to see kind of them land on a huge scale where, you know, in the UK we're getting this huge marketing push and this is being, you know, labeled as a big horror movie, and I'm so glad it is. You know, when we see these kind of, you know, these haunting movies that just feel so generic and they're getting so much attention and getting so much, you know, bums on seats in cinema for the mainstream, you know, I'm grateful that people are seeing movies like this as well.
Yeah, definitely. Like, that Insidious sequel just became the highest grossing horror movie of the year in the past week. Yeah. And it's just sad because it's the fifth one and it fucking sucks as well. And it's just like, it just shows that they're going to keep making them because they make money. And so to see something like this come out and just reading now about this journey, like, it couldn't have gone any better for them, really, where they had their world premiere at Sundance earlier this year as part of their midnight lineup. And then immediately after that, the next day, it was a bidding war. And apparently Universal Pictures really wanted it, but A24 eventually won. So again, this was like, it wasn't like A24 were like, oh, this kind of looks cool. Like, they were in a bidding war with a major distribution company in Universal.
Yeah, they went all in on
that. Yeah, so like, they probably paid a hell of a lot more than what this movie actually cost to make. And then they've got to put all the promotion behind it. So like, it's doing well at the box office. Obviously, if you compare it just its budget to its revenue, it's done fantastically well. And obviously, that now makes way more sense why they would want a sequel, because they're going to be in control of all of that stuff. So like, they own the IP now, you know, so they're going to want to make more of this. So again, I don't begrudge them for wanting a sequel. I just don't know if I necessarily need one, but yeah, what a great film. Like, I feel like we've been so nervous where we haven't even talked too much about story because we don't want to go into it, but I prefer these chats where we're just talking about how it made us feel. And I feel great coming off the back of a haunting movie at the cinema, and I've not felt that way since The Conjuring 2, which was about 7 years ago. And that's wild to me. And I think that my takeaway, having seen this film as well, where I was like, I don't want to see any of these anymore. Like, it was funny because you would think it would have the opposite effect, where it's like, oh, I like these now. And it's like, no, I just think this one's brilliant and it's the exception to the rule. And it's made me think that Haunting in Venice and Cobweb and The Nun 2 and potentially even The Exorcist, like, I just don't care. Like, maybe we'll watch them at home or something, but I don't want to be a number anymore, because we're actively contributing to something that we really dislike. And at a certain point, it's like, yeah, we feel like we're covering it for the show. But the fact that I did contribute to that Insidious number, like, I'm annoyed at myself, because I should, after seeing the fourth movie at the cinema, I never should have seen the fifth movie at the cinema. So it is difficult. Like, I'm at odds with myself But I do.
There are conversations to be had, I think, more on a case by case basis. You know, I think there's stuff like the Nun 2 and the Venice one that just we have no interest in. I think something like The Exorcist is a is an interesting enough conversation with the IP that it is. You know,
that it can be. We like the trailer for The Exorcist as well.
Yeah, and the trailer looked good, you know. And so I think it is just, it's being more aggressive with not being like, oh, okay, it's a cinema horror, we have to do it, you know. And yeah, you have to sometimes put yourself out there and see things you don't like, but ultimately it's our show and we want to see things we like. We like to be positive. We're not here to be negative. The negative conversations we have are most of the time some of my least favorite conversations, you know. We have a laugh sometimes when we are bragging on a movie, but ultimately I just don't want to do that. People spend hours and hours and hours making this and pour their hearts and souls into it. And I'm sure they're not trying to make something that people don't like. And so, you know, for me, something like this where I can just be overwhelmingly positive, but genuinely so, it is a great time, you know, and that's what I want to have.
Yeah, I could not agree with that more. Every single sentiment. Like I say, we want to like things, but then you hit the nail on the head of we have to be genuine. And so sometimes it will come across as like, oh, they're moaning about a possession movie again. But that's just how we feel about them. And that's what's so exceptional about this, is that this is just a positive story all around from like the people who made it, and kind of for them to pivot in such a successful way. It is that in itself is commendable, but then to make such an original horror movie, everyone else has just nailed it, from A24 to obviously these creators to the entire cast. And they've ultimately, even if you think you don't necessarily care about that, because I know we're more in the weeds of the kind of horror genre, and people might be thinking, I just want to watch good films. Well, I've got great news for you. This is an absolutely great horror film, and it's easily one of the best of this year. And I guess that kind of goes into our recommendations of like, yeah, this is a no-brainer. Like, I could not be less enthusiastic about possession movies, and this would be as strong a recommendation as I could give to any cinema horror. Like, you just have to see it, because I think it's such a cool original take where it hits both avenues, where like it's a meta commentary on this current state, I think, of possession movies, without just saying like, oh yeah, they're all shit and annoying, aren't they? It's like, no, it's saying like, yeah, they're kind of overdone, but you can actually do something original if you mix up that formula. Like, guess what, you don't have to have a goddamn day and night cycle every single time. Like,
oh my god, this movie doesn't have a day and night cycle.
It's crazy. Well, it's like, refreshing, because the entire concept is they're in charge of when the ghosts get laying, and so immediately you wrote into your entire concept of your film an anti-day and night mechanic, which is just another thing about this movie that's brilliant. But yeah, what would you say to recommend it?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is probably the best cinema horror we've seen all year in terms of...
Goddamn.
If you just want to... I'm not saying, like, in terms of, like, versus, like, Scream and this... You know, you're seeing the sixth entry into a franchise at this point. And the fact that you're out on a Saturday night and you're like, I want to see a horror movie and I wanted to have a good time watching a horror movie. Like, I couldn't think of a better recommendation than this, where it's like, yeah, there's no strings attached. Just go have a great time. You're going to have a great 90 minutes. You haven't got to watch five movies beforehand. You don't have to watch a movie from 40 years ago to get the references. You know, you don't have to watch spin-offs of Nuns and all manner of stuff. You can just go watch this and you're going to have a great original time. And so, in terms of just a fun cinema horror, then yeah, I don't think there's a better one this year. So yeah, this is a super strong recommendation. And in particular at cinema, if you are someone that wants to go see fun horror movies at the cinema, you know, I think, you know, people are going and having a fun time watching this.
It's also not convoluted. Like, it's such an easy story to follow. Like, as soon as you get that premise, that's it. And another thing that we haven't touched upon, the runtime. Like, the runtime is perfect. This is like a 90-minute horror film. And, like, we've seen so much long stuff lately. And a lot of it's been really, really good. But it does start to get exhausting when every movie you see is two and a half hours, God forbid, 3 hours. Ooh. And, like, to see a 90-minute movie, I was like, brilliant. And this was the exact runtime for this movie as well. Like, perfect.
Well, the second the writers spoke about the sequel and the fact they have all this mythology and stuff, I think it just, you know, shows the level of the restraint that they had on the editing room, where like and the fact there's this whole prequel that's shot, I'm like, I think that they did an incredible job in the edit to be like, no, we just need to make a baller 90 minute movie. And like, we've got like this 40 minutes of mythology that we love and, you know, gives the backstory of the hand or whatever, but ultimately who cares? Let's have a fun horror movie. And so, you know, I think who knows, like I've made assumptions there, but from what they've now said of the movie coming out, like I can easily see that there's a ton of shit that's in their heads, obviously. And they've shown a level of restraint to be like, no, we're here to make a film for people to go watch in the cinema. And so that is our blueprint first and foremost. And they nailed it.
Yeah, this like duck it prequel thing is interesting because like if they put it out online, I'll watch it because I love this film.
For sure.
But I'm so glad that's not in this film because I almost feel like they revisit it once and that was already like, okay, don't revisit this for long. And they luckily they get in and get out and just move on with the story. But I was already like, that was just the classic, you know, oh, it's the horror moment to open the film and it kind of introduces you to what the hand is. And that was it. I didn't need anything else of those characters. And so
when we only need to see someone in an insane asylum like 10 years
later. Yeah, and like, and obviously they do revisit it at one point. But again, that's so brief that I'm glad it is one scene and it's like a 3 minute scene and it's done. And I'm like, brilliant. Because if we'd have gone into the hall, okay, now we're going to get this brand new character that you saw for 30 seconds at the start of the film. He's going to now take up the next 20 minutes explaining what happened to him and how you can break the curse that he wasn't successful with, that just wouldn't have worked. And that's what most possession movies would have done. Like that's what that bloody Stephen King thing that we saw, the Boogeyman, that's exactly what that did. Of like, here's this offshoot story from the intro that's 25 minutes long that's unnecessary, or even Insidious with this entire fucking story with Patrick Wilson that we didn't need. Like I honestly feel like this movie is a reaction to all of the shit we've talked about so many films this year of like very specific problems as to why I think we validly didn't like a lot of films this year. This actively avoided all of them. And it's so impressive. It's crazy.
Yeah, I know. Like it didn't do anything to piss me off in this genre that, you know, it's so easily done.
Yeah, it's remarkable. It really is. Like, I'm like, did I actually see this film and like this as much as I did? Because it's crazy.
Yeah, I know. I'm confused. I am confused.
But no, we did. It's awesome. Like, it's a great one. Yeah, we've had the last couple of weeks, actually, we've talked about movies, new horror movies we actually really like, which is always nice. So long may it continue. But yeah, that was our discussion on Talk to Me. We'll take a quick break and we will be right back. Yeah, we did actually have a comment on Twitter this week that I just wanted to briefly throw it to you to see if you could help out our listener Carl, who said, started watching From. I think I heard it recommended by Super Horror Bros. I have no clue what's going on. No, yeah. I can't help because I've not started it yet. So can you help? But obviously no spoilers.
I would say, Carl, it sounds like you're watching From. And that will continue. That thought will continue. Just strap in and enjoy it. Because it is confusing. And every episode throughout all of season one and most of season two creates just more questions, really. And more confusion. But I enjoyed that ride and I'm still enjoying that ride. Like if this was the end of From, I'd be incredibly frustrated. But I'm happy just getting more questions and answers currently.
Yeah.
So yeah, stick with it because it's fun.
I am more nervous now about starting it because so I'm already, you know, I'm like midway through the final season of Lost now, which is already a lot to take, you know. Yeah, in terms of following something, it's already difficult, but then just like my emotional attachment to it, like I'm getting so drained watching it. And like the fact that I have The Last of Us 4K just sitting here and I'm not even remotely in the mood to watch that, where I'm like, I was going to buy it day one. I want to support it. I'm going to own that forever. But like, I don't know when I'm going to be emotionally available to watch that again.
No, I keep looking at it and I'm like, not yet.
Yeah, there's no chance it happens this year. Like absolutely zero chance. Because again, it gets to my next point of like, I'm just worried about TV right now. You know, with this ongoing strike, like things look really, really shit. And I'm already invested in The Last of Us, Lord of the Rings, Severance, Euphoria. Like, there's multiple shows that are probably Stranger Things. Like, there's already shows that I will genuinely forget that I'm a fan of because they'll have been gone for so long. And we don't know when all of those shows we just listed, we have no idea when they're coming back. Like, it could be years. And I'm really nervous because, yes, they've announced a season three of From, which is great. But, like, we don't know when that's happening. So, like, I just don't think I'm ready right now. I'm so nervous with the future of TV right now.
Post Lost is not the time to start watching From.
No, like, I wanted to watch it this year, but I just don't know if I'm going to get around to it now. Because, like I say, with TV...
Yeah, it disappoints me because I want you to see it for the year end. But I don't think you'll get the best experience coming straight out of Lost watching it.
Yeah, like, I was definitely going to give it a month or two anyway. And I'll just see where my head's at because I'm worried with... Like, seeing TV now, I'm so nervous because something like Lord of the Rings that you wait so long for, and then we just don't know when that's going to come, let alone something like Stranger Things that, granted, we could have never foreseen this. So this was never a reality. We couldn't have just stopped ourselves from being fans of it, and I'm glad I haven't. I'm glad I've had the experience of watching every season as it come out. But something like Severance, that I've, you know, it was only one season of that show, and I loved it, and I highly recommended it to people at the time. But now I'd be like, don't watch it, because, like, I don't know when that's ever going to come back.
I'm like, cool, I'm waiting.
It's so good. I know you'll love it, but it ends on a crazy cliffhanger. And I, right now, I'd even struggle to tell you what that cliffhanger's been because it's been a year already. And, like, I just don't have that headspace for TV anymore where I can waste years of my life waiting for it. Like I say, with Lord of the Rings, that's going to be a difficult one. Like, that's not too bad because I'm excited to rewatch that anyway. So I'll definitely rewatch that before if it ever comes back. And obviously, Last of Us is different.
If I didn't rewatch Lord of the Rings, I'm already struggling.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Like I say, like, stuff like Stranger Things is built up that, like, the second I'll see those characters, I'll be reminded. And obviously, Last of Us is a story that we're all too familiar with. But these new shows, specifically Severance, because it's a brand new thing, and then similarly with something like From, it's like you're going in with nothing. You're learning everything on the fly, and then you have to remember what is seemingly a confusing storyline over multiple years. Like, it's just difficult. And like I say,
it's not that confusing. They answer a lot of things. I don't know what
you've just gone back on your entire answer.
It answers nothing.
I guess what's crazy that, like, Chucky is coming this year. Like, that's awesome because, well, yeah, I know. I feel like they just got that. They snuck that in somehow because, yeah, that otherwise that would have been a case of, you know, they'd had to wait years and, oh, it just would have been terrible. But, yeah, I don't know about TV, man. Like, I was thinking about American Horror Story recently because...
How did we not watch
that? That's what's mind-blown to me is I've loved it for 10 years. And that,
you didn't even give it
last year I just didn't watch it. And granted, that is purely their own fault because of that spin-off. Because obviously I watched the whole of the first season, didn't like it. I watched the first episode of season two, which came out just before it, and hated it. And that just put me off it. And I know that's not super valid, but you are watching an American Horror Story product that just sucks. And so
I think it's absolutely valid, you know, because I think franchise fatigue, and especially when you're like 10 seasons into the main show and then you put out these spin-offs that are subpar, because I watched all of season two of American Horror Stories. And that was why when the new season dropped instantly, I was like, I'm drained. Like, and as a big fan of the show, of course I'm going to want to watch the spin-offs. But then, you know, and you have to learn how to feed that, you know, fan base in the correct way. And having a spin-off like that just cannibalized it, you know? And so I think it's incredibly valid to call it out on that when it, you know, just messes up the momentum of, you know, 10, 15 years of loyalty and fandom. You know, it really does do that.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it the other day where I was like, man, it is crazy that I'm not a completionist when it comes to TV. Like, I'm more than happy to avoid that a lot of people have as that sunken cost fallacy that I'm sure I know you have it because you had it with The Walking Dead for many, many years.
Yeah,
of like people just feel like they've committed so much time that they have to then waste more time. And I just don't have that, luckily, with TV. But with American Horror Story...
I've never sold any DVDs,
mate. With American Horror...
I've never realized that.
Exactly, yeah. you just have no idea how much you've lost watching Walking Dead. We'll never know. But let's move on. I forgot what I was going to say now. Something about American Horror Story. It's crazy that, yeah, like, I've not watched this most recent season, and I liked the sound of it. Yeah. They were bringing back Zachary Quinto, who I'm a huge fan of and don't get to see enough of. And obviously, it's coming back again this year, but I'm not worried about that. Like, it's not a case of, rushing to it, because it's not relevant. And that's what's so exciting, is the idea of it's just one season. So it doesn't matter with the strike. It doesn't matter with waiting. You don't even have to wait week to week, because it's all just sitting there ready to go. So like I could just have a weekend where I binged it. So yeah, I do want to watch that last year of American Horror Story, because I also have no idea about it, because I'm so off socials anyway. I have no idea if it's one of the best, one of the worst. Yeah, like I have no idea. I know almost nothing about it other than Zachary Quinto was in it. So yeah. I definitely want to give that a go at some point.
It's high on my list for sure as well. Like I've cleared a lot of my backlog TV wise, and so that definitely is high on my list.
Yeah, I feel like I just forgot about it, and then it popped into my head like a month ago when I was thinking about From and getting towards the end of Lost, and I was looking at like obviously I want to watch True Blood at some point, but again I'm not desperate to do it. And I was just thinking about American Horror Story. I was like, oh yeah, like because my brain goes to so many crazy places with TV, man. Like if I had just unlimited time. There's like, I would love to watch all of 24. I was thinking of.
I fucking knew. I wish I could have paused you. I knew you.
I know. I'd love 24 so much. Because, like, every clip I see of it, I'm like, I'd love this show. And I've barely seen any of it. Let alone something like Fringe that is so up my alley as well that I don't have a proper thing of. And then, like I'd love to rewatch Alias because I loved Alias. And so there's just so much shit that I would love to either rewatch or would rather spend my time watching something for the first time, like Fringe and 24, that I've watched some of it but not all of it. That's why with True Blood, like I obviously never finished True Blood, so I would love to watch that, which I will.
Well, it's great because you ain't getting any new shit.
No, I know, that's a good thing. Yeah, I guess this is a problem.
This well is dried up.
This
problem has been solved.
Yeah, it's called 2024 in TV because I worry for HBO because I don't know what they're going to have next year. Like they're just not going to have
True Blood reruns.
Yeah, I was going to say it's great. We'll just do that. But yeah, it'll be interesting. Like, yeah, I think you're absolutely right that this TV problem I have will not be a problem in the coming years. So, but it sucks because I want new stuff. It's exciting, and obviously I'm so invested in stuff like Lord of the Rings and Stranger Things, Last of Us and Stranger Things, like two of my favorite shows ever, let alone stuff like Lord of the Rings and Severance and other things that I really, really liked as well. So it is just a case of we'll just have to wait and see. Who knows? Like sometimes it's not as doom and gloom as you might think. We survived COVID for God's sake, but like this strike stuff just doesn't look like it's ending anytime soon. And like I feel like when we had, I remember the mini strike, like in what 2010 or whatever it was, which really fucked TV for a while. And we had these like shortened seasons. Like there's a weird season of Lost that's just shorter, and it was like every show just got suffered at that time. But that felt tiny compared to what's going on right now.
That didn't feel like it got publicized in the press, and then suddenly just like all of these TV shows came out shorter, and they're like, oh yeah, it was a writer's strike, and it was like, oh damn,
yeah, they were like, that was a crazy fortnight.
Yeah, whereas this is like, oh yeah, we've just not had anything for months at this point.
Yeah, and obviously with the film people, like the actual genuinely A-list, which again, that did not happen last time. When you're seeing like actual A-list actors talking about it, walking out of premieres and stuff, like this is a real thing that isn't going away. And it seems like both sides are very firm in their stance as well. That's the other thing. I just don't see a resolution that suits all parties.
We're at a stalemate.
Yeah, that's exactly what it feels like. So I am genuinely worried, but
I think though that what you've said, the fact that we've lived through COVID, I almost like I'm like I just feel well equipped for it,
because I really thought like, cinema like, experience was I was worried that like cinemas would go away. Like that was genuinely something with the rise of streaming services. They were right there. Like COVID was brilliant for Netflix and Amazon Prime and all these things, because it was like, you can do is stay at home and have unlimited time. And that's why all of these subscription services peaked, and why they've now suffered dramatically, because everyone's unsubscribed because they can actually go out and do stuff now.
Well, that's the great thing, that with all of this negativity, well, not negativity, because it's rightly putting a highlight on it, but with all of this strike and the fact that things aren't getting made, the last month is the busiest we've ever seen our local cinema post-COVID.
It's crazy.
you know, with Mission Impossible, Oppenheimer and Barbie, like, in theaters, it's rammed. Our cinema has been rammed for the last few weeks, and then seeing something like Talk to Me week two, and we thought we'd be walking into the cinema dead, and it was heaving, you know, and it's like the cinema is as busiest as it's been for 3 or 4 years, you know, and that is annoying because we like, we like to sit in an empty cinema and be grumpy buggers, but also it's great because it means cinema's not going anywhere, because unfortunately they're not going to keep the lights on just for me and you to sit there. You know, so, you know, it is good to see that cinema is as popular as it has been for years.
Yeah, selfishly, week to week, it sucks. But we can obviously both look at the big picture and, like, it's fantastic. Like, it's so good. And, like, say, these are actually great films as well. Like, I've not, Barbie's the only one of those I haven't seen, but I saw Mission Impossible twice and loved it. Oppenheimer's amazing. Talk to Me is brilliant. Like, for all, in you know, regardless of how Barbie is, I think it's an awesome conversation that people are having. So it's really good. Like, it's such a good time. So yeah, good stuff. Like I say, at least cinema is popping off, even though TV is worrying at the minute. But yeah, good times. Very good episode. Enjoyed our chats this week. But yeah, that was episode 359. Thanks for listening, as always, and we'll see you again very soon.
See you later, everyone.
Shut up, I can't. Mainly because I never could. How could I start now?